Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Sagari nere sagani sagamadamare.
Sutramu Bharatvajas Gotramu Apastamba Sutramu Bharatvajas Gotramu Sakala Devatarupamu Ratnakaravamsham
Om Shri Sai Ram. I offer myself at Bhagwan's lotus feet as I sign in live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. My name is Karuna and today is the 21st of May 2015 and the time in the ashram right now is 58 minutes past 9 a.m. which is pretty late, and I apologize for signing in late on Morning Glory, the reason being some technical constraints which are really beyond our control at this moment, but we hope that Bhagwan will resolve them soon for us. The current temperature in the ashram is 24 degrees Celsius. Today we are expecting a high of about 38, overnight low of 25 degrees Celsius. If my reckoning is right, today is going to be the hottest day of this year so far, which makes the summer really mild and bearable by Prati standards. I do not recall a single day this year so far, and the month of May is our hottest month, when the mercury has touched 40. And further good news is that we only have about 2 more weeks to go before the summer cools off, which generally happens around the first week of June. And if the Indian Meteorological Department is accurate, the great Indian monsoon is tracking on time, which is good to know. Plus, the heavy pre-monsoon showers in Parthi last weekend further helped to moisten the dry earth here and brought us much happiness. You know what they say, May showers bring spring flowers. Actually, the flowers of joy in our hearts are blooming all year round in Prashanthi Nilayam, because the showers of Bhagwan's grace are always drenching us here. So all things considered, life truly is a cakewalk in the abode of supreme peace, where the heart is at home, the mind at ease, and the soul in its natural state of bliss. On that blissful note, dear sisters and brothers, I just wanted to convey a big thank you to all of you out there for the warm and encouraging feedback that you sent in for our first episode of Learning with Love that debuted last week. We are so grateful to Swami that so many of you enjoyed the interview with the young French lady, Marine O'Franck. Happy to report, dear listeners, that today you need to brace yourselves for another amazing, outstanding and glorious episode of Learning with Love. This time with a young doctor from Chennai, India, who shares the lessons that she has learned in life due to her association with the apostle of ultimate love, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Dr. P.L. Vidya is an overachiever who spills the beans behind her unprecedented success. And yes, I'm not exaggerating, dear listeners, Her success is truly unparalleled, as you will soon discover. Dr. Vidya is a role model who attributes all her success to her Sai bearings, and I'm honored to bring you part one of this interview right here, right now, under our new and occasional series, Learning with Love. It's a special offering at the Lotus Feet of Our Lord from Team Radio Sai, and as I told you last week, it's a variant of Trist with Divinity, making it Trist with a twist. And a quick heads up, in the second half of Morning Glory, we have a Trist with Divinity interview with Mr. Jagannathan of Sri Lanka. But first, let us enjoy part one of PL Vidya's Learning with Love interview that we recorded in Prashanthi Nilayam on the 19th of September 2014. Sairam, dear listeners, today's episode of Learning with Love promises some serious learning for all of us, especially for our Balvikas and SSC students the world over, and more importantly, for their parents and gurus. That is because our guest today is a young overachiever, a medical doctor who swept 10 gold medals at her recent graduation from the Tamil Nadu Dr. MGR Medical University. And she has dozens more in her kitty since school years. All of 24 years of age, Chennai-based Dr. Miss Vidya Palaniappan has some incredibly stupendous achievements to her credit, and most of which she attributes to her weekend education in human values or the Sri Satya Sai Balvikas program. Now the question becomes, how can a couple of hours of Sai spiritual education impact a person's ability so profoundly as to unleash their potential to achieve unprecedented success in all areas of their life? Before I list just a few of her mind-blowing achievements, let me tell you that Dr. Vidya Palaniappan is the daughter of ardent Sai devotees and hard-working Sai sevaks, both of whom are chartered accountants by profession. Her mother, Mrs. P. L. Uma Maheshwari, has herself been a Sai youth from Tamil Nadu and is now an active Seva Dal who has attended Sai conferences in Parthi and regularly participates in Sai activities at Sundaram in Chennai. Vidya's father, Mr. S. P. Palaniappan, is also a member of the Sai Samiti and participates in Parthi Seva and other service activities at Sundaram, the hub of Sai activities in Chennai. Vidya's brother, Karthik Palaniappan, is currently pursuing his doctorate in electrical sciences at the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee, USA. Like Vidya, Karthik too is an alumnus of the Sri Satya Sai Balvikas program of Tamil Nadu. Now this family of geniuses attribute their success in life to Bhagwan's Balvikas program and are grateful that they were guided to him by Vidya's maternal great-grandmother, late Mrs. Nachamai Achi. Now, our guest Dr. Vidya joined Balvikas at the age of 5, and she has completed the entire program, winning every possible award, medal, and competition along the way as she aced through the program. She has performed in dance dramas, elocution, voiceover plays, been there, done it, all things Balvikas to perfection. When it comes to academics, Vidya's accomplishments speak for themselves. In 2006, she completed her grade 10 from the Chettinad Vidya Ashram as the best outgoing student, and she scored 96%. If that wasn't enough, 2 years later in 2008, she completed her grade 12 from the DAV Higher Secondary School with 98.8% marks. That is a meager 1.2 short of 100% score. How does anyone ace like that? Hopefully, we'll find out soon. In 2014, just before we recorded this interview on September the 19th, she passed her MBBS from the Madras Medical College and was named the best outgoing student and university topper with 80.6%, winning 10 gold medals in her undergrad medical degree. And prior to that, she has won another 24, yeah, you heard it right, another 24 gold medals over and above the 10 I mentioned earlier. These 24 gold medals were from the Madras Medical College, which is rated amongst the top medical schools in India.
Currently, Dr. Vidya is preparing for her post-grad medical entrance exam, and when she is not working towards her 35th gold medal, she enjoys sketching, bhajan singing and other recreational activities. Sairam, Dr. Vidya, and welcome to Learning with Love.
Om Shri Sairam. I offer my most humble and loving pranams at the divine lotus feet of my most beloved Swami. Thank you, Swami, for giving me this opportunity to be here, right in God's own radio station. Radio Sai is like the first thing that I wake up to every morning to get my daily dose of Sai inspires. And you people are doing a brilliant job. Hats off. Sai Ram.
Oh, wonderful. We are also grateful to Swami for bringing you to us. First of all, let me start by saying congratulations on your amazing achievements.
Sai Ram, thank you so much. I really feel humbled to have been introduced as Swami's Balvika student, because it's only because of Swami that I am what I am today.
Vidya, before we go any further, I'm very curious to know, where do you keep these 35, 34 gold medals? Oh. Do you have a special bank locker for these?
No, that in front of Swami's altar in my house. Swami keeps them with him.
At his lotus feet?
Yes, definitely, all the time.
Wonderful. Now, what amazes me is the fact that you credit Balvikas to such a large extent for bringing you where you are in your life right now. Would you care to explain, Vidya?
Yes, I feel really humbled to have been introduced as Swami's Balvika student. See, it's because I can firmly ascertain that it's only because of Swami that I am what I am today, and that further adds to my conviction that, you know, I can feel rest assured that my, just like any other Swami student's future, is safe in Swami's divine hands. So Balvikas was how Swami got introduced to me. But how Swami entered into my family actually spans three generations. It all started with my great-grandmother. I think she was running a small business down south in Tamil Nadu when she was having some financial problems. And that's when one of her customers advised her, see, why don't you go meet this man called Sai Baba who lives in a small village near Puttaparthi. People say that if you go meet him, all your problems will be solved. So I think that's how Swami called her. She started off from my village. See, those days, forget the modes of transport. She had no idea where this village was. This is in the early 1960s. So she started off, I remember she telling me that it took her 4 to 5 days to reach Parthi. And once she landed here in Parthi, she only saw a small building with groups of devotees who were living in tents. And she learned from one of them that that man in the orange robe is Sai Baba. And it seems Swami came up to her, spoke with her. I'm not aware of all the dialogues that happened between them, but I remember her telling me that Swami took her along with him to one of the devotees' house, and there she had, Swami had offered her sharbat to drink. So I still remember my grandma's face brimming with joy, reminiscing her opportunity to have, you know, to share sharbat with Swami. And then she had become a regular. I think once Swami had given her a spatika lingam for the sake of my great-grandfather, who was not alive then, but he was an ardent devotee of Lord Shiva. And then the next time, Swami had materialized a Krishna idol to my grandmother, because she herself believed in Lord Krishna. So, you know, that's what Swami says. Whichever form you want to worship, you know, be it Rama, Krishna, Allah, Jesus, Buddha, I think everything ultimately reaches him. So we just need to have that steady faith in Swami. And then after a few years after my mother was born, they had the opportunity to have Swami's interview. My great-grandma, my grandma, my aunt and my mother. She was just a toddler then. In that interview, my grandmother, that is my mother's mother, Swami had asked her, what do you want? You know, imagine the Lord of the universe coming and asking you what you want. And now she, you know, she tells me how ignorant she was, not fully aware of Swami's divinity. And she only asked Swami to bless all her children. Swami blessed her. He gave vibhuti to everyone in that interview. I think 4 or 5 people were there. And he personally applied it on my grandma's face. And, you know, he's the one who's taking care of all of us. You know, all of us are his children, right? So that assurance was given then. And then after a few years, I think there was a long gap for unknown reasons. But nevertheless, my family was a very religious family. And I think when I was 4 years, 4 and a half years old, that my mother, she was going to this temple near my house in Mylapore in Chennai. That's when she heard all these shlokas and songs resonating the air, and she inquired as to what was going on. She found that it was a class for children, and that's it. From then on, my brother and me, you could find us sitting in that temple from 4 to 5:30 p.m. on all Saturdays, and that was the Balvikas class for me. So that's how Swami entered into my life. The first time that Swami had given me his sankalpa to come to Parsi was almost 20 years ago. When I had come with my grandmother and mother, just like how we have come now, that time it was to write my first standard entrance examination to Swami school. My mother was really happy when I cleared the entrance written examination. But I have no idea why or how that I had to disappoint her by getting rejected in the exam. Ooh. Yes.
Grade 1.
Swami already knew, maybe. And I did learn a lesson from this experience, you know. See, even if it's a rejection, it's only for our good. Swami knows the best for us. So, but my mother was not to give up. You know, she used to try every year. She used to send applications to Swami school every year. Because sometimes, you know, there is this possibility of lateral entry. Mm. In case there are any vacancies, they accept applications. So seeing that, even I used to pray to Swami, "Swami, please, you know, take me into your school." And as years passed, and when that was not happening, my prayers were like, "Swami, at least into a college." So it was around that time, but you know, that I started growing this passion towards medicine and the idea of becoming a doctor. So then there was this bigger conflict in my mind. Wait, do you want to join Swami's college or do you want to do medicine? It was really hard. And in fact, you know, me and my Balvika's friend, she wanted to study law and I wanted to do medicine. And only thing that we prayed to Swami every day was, "Swami, please start a medical school and a law school." That's the only solution we can think of. So after that, it was really hard for me to decide, but I think that's what Swami's will is. And by Swami's grace, I had got into the best college in the state, Madras Medical College. And
when you had some incredible scores there, 98.8.
Yeah, that was my 12th standard marks that helped me get into the best college in the state through state quota, through merit.
That's amazing. Fantastic.
You know, all Swami's grace. Swami's been really kind to me, in fact.
What do you mean kind to you? You're the one who studied hard, right?
No, I'll tell you, you know, Swami is the doer. I'll let you know. So after that, I think, you know, like Swami's will, and maybe that's why he even rejected me at the beginning. So once I started medicine, I think that's the best thing that would have happened to me, because that way I actually felt coming closer to Swami. For example, you know, the very first subject is anatomy for us, the science of study of human body. Appa, what a fascination it is. You know, to know and understand every part of your body, every organ, every nerve, every muscle, every cell, you know, as to how Swami would have created it. And, you know, trying to comprehend their functions within man's own limited capacity, oh, my love for Swami only increased manifold. And then once I started my undergraduate studies, now my prayers were shifted towards, you know, "Swami, please, now that I'm in this field, please bless me with the opportunity to have to work and study in your hospital." My mother, who knows about all these things, you know, she came to me recently and she said, "See, Swami has already fulfilled the first part of your wish." I was startled. "Amma, what are you saying? You know, I'm still in Chennai studying for my post-graduation." Then it struck me, you know, that actually, as soon as I got graduated, within a couple of days, the first place I ever worked was under the banner Sri Satya Sai Mobile Hospital in Chennai. Swami is my first employer, seriously. And that's a wonderful thing, you know. You are taking the state-of-the-art medical technology to relieve the sufferings of the poor right at their doorstep. But I'm ever grateful to Swami for that, you know, for giving me that biggest opportunity. So do I need any assurance that, you know, Swami is taking care of me? See, when I got rejected from Swami's primary school, I think Swami already had his plan for me, the best plan, you know. What else can you ask for? So I'm really grateful to Swami for, you know, making me study medicine, and that's the best thing that could have happened to me. You know, that made me realize that, you know, all prayers are answered, but in Swami's time.
So Vidya, you're in such a amazing place, in such a happy place in life right now, I should say.
Yes.
Your success is all yours in every aspect of your life, professionally, academically, in terms of your character. How is it that you attribute this success so substantially to Balvikas? How did Balvikas make you who you are today?
Yes. Balvikas, Swami himself, is a world phenomenon. And Balvikas is not just a program. It's a noble movement. You know, it's like a revolution. You know, so Swami explains Balvikas as Vikas, the blooming of a flower. You know, the flower pleases us because of its beauty, its simplicity and innocence. That's how every child is. You know, child is ever pleasing, always speaks the truth, very innocent, shares whatever it has with others. That's why Swami says every child is a flower in this garden of Sai. The aims of Balvikas has precisely been to foster character development and to bring about the spiritual transformation. It also helps to inculcate the habits of discipline, you know, mastering one's mind and having absolute control over your sense organs. It helps to cultivate that humility, practice sealing on desires, and, you know, to render selfless service. See, all and more, there are lots of qualities that I have learned. But if you ask me to pick one among them, you know, or the first among the list of qualities, or something that is very close to Swami, it's definitely respect your mother, respect your parents. See, I have had, you know, several experiences of how my day doesn't turn out the way I want. Like, maybe I didn't do my exam well, or I had some problems at my workplace and stuff. When I sat down to retrospectively analyze what would have probably gone wrong, I think those were the days I have had an argument with my mother before I started. So, you know, consciously I made an effort from the next time that, you know, I have to make my mother happy, or at least avoid an argument with her before I go for my work next time, and it really worked. See, this is not a sentiment that, you know, you make your mother happy and your day works out, or if you had a fight with your mother, it doesn't work out. No, it's so practical. See, imagine I had a fight with my mother today morning. I know I have really upset her, and that, you know, my conscience pricks me because I've done something really wrong, and therefore my mood is also spoiled, and then, you know, it shows up in my performance. I don't do well. But if you go and, you know, recycle the entire cycle with happiness filling everywhere, like you, starting from making your mother happy, then you are happy and cheerful, and you also make, you know, you make sure your work is also as productive as you can do. So that, you know, I think the first requisite of every child is to love and to have regard for your parents. We owe everything to them. So that's the first thing they teach you in Balvikas, you know, to touch your parents' feet every day in the morning. Trust me, it really works. And I make sure I do that even now before I start for my work. See, personally for me, I've had Swami's beautiful darshan a number of times. But sparshan and sambhashan of Swami is something that I've really longed for. You know, as everyone, I've also prayed to Swami, please bless me with your paas and namaskaram. But you know, one day it dawned on me, you know, what a fool I have been. See, Swami always says, mother is your first god, father is your second god, guru is next, and then only God himself. So in that case, hasn't Swami made it easy for us that, you know, we just have to make our parents happy and get their Pada Namaskaram every day, and everything, you know, everything is solved. So, you know, these are some of the important lessons, you know, the lessons of character that I've learned from Balvikas. And see, character is not a subject to be taught or learnt. They are values to be imbibed, for which we require not books, but living models. You know, that's why Swami embarks on gurus. In one of the gurus' conferences, Swami said, he advised the gurus to be, do and tell. So, you know, gurus play a major role in every child's life. And next, he also tells the parents. See, parents are the first role models that every child has. So parents have to connect themselves properly for us to learn from them. This reminds me of Swami's, you know, one of the famous plays, Cheppinattu Chestara, Do You Do As You Say, in which the protagonist, you know, learns the unity and harmony in thought, word and deed. Wait, this was Swami's first play, isn't it?
As a little boy.
So, don't we have the Lord of the Universe himself walking in flesh and blood, teaching us and leading us the way? You know, isn't Swami the best son any mother could have asked for? He fulfilled every wish of his mother, you know, rightly called Ishwaramma. So actually, as a child, you know, I've really been inspired by Swami's life. I used to read a lot about, you know, Swami's childhood and try to emulate whichever, you know, was possible from my side. See, we all know that Swami had to walk miles together to write his public examination, to go to school. There was no comfort, there was no convenience. And the first thing Swami did every day in the morning was to, you know, carry a huge earthen pot and bring drinking water to his house from miles, you know, from river that was miles away. See, Swami never complained when he had to do all this. So, you know, at this age, I think all of us are blessed with our parents who give us all the luxury and comfort in life. So what are we going to do to them? You know, Swami says, parent means pay rent. You know, we children have the duty to pay the rent of respect, love and service to them. See, Swami, you know, he did every household work possible, used to help everyone in the house. So, you know, inspired by this, I remember how my brother and me, you know, once we started cleaning all the windows and doors and, you know, small things at home. And but my mother, out of all her love for us, she couldn't watch us do. But we told her, see, Swami has done all that, so please let us also do. And I remember how she used to reward us with, you know, a chocolate or 1 or 2 rupees so that we can put it in our piggy bank for every work that we did. See, you know, you can learn enormous lessons from Swami's life. Swami's wants were very few. In fact, nothing at all. So whatever he had, he used to give it to others. He used to starve so that he can feed the poor and needy. And he used to have only one pair of clothes that he used to wash every day so that he can use it for the next day. You know, self-reliance at its best. And especially, you know, this lesson about what Swami taught, you know, about friendship. It was very useful, especially when you're in the vulnerable age as a teenager. He used to say that there should be no giving and taking amongst friends. You know, that will only spoil your friendship. You know, once you start this give and take between friends, you know, there immediately sprouts expectation. You know, you are giving something to her and you'll expect something else in for your birthday, you know, for example. And then, you know, the whole, when, you know, there's expectation, I think it almost always leads to disappointment. And then the whole purity of the relationship itself is lost. You know, this he demonstrated by refusing to accept one pair of khaki pants and shirts that one of his very close classmates had offered to give him for the sake of the scouts movements that Swami was to attend. And not just this, you know, Swami emphasizes a lot on food, you know, apart from Annam Brahma, don't waste food. He also, you know, he didn't want us to eat meat. You know, food one consumes determines one's thought. Once you start feeding on animal food, you know, you start imbibing their qualities. As is the food, so is the head. So, and besides, it's also very sinful to feed on animals because they are made of the same five elements as human bodies, right? So I remember, you know, this was taught to us in Balvikas, you know, to stop eating meat in case you did. And I know a lot of families of Balvikas children who stopped cooking meat at their home. You know, that's how Swami was bringing out, you know, the transformation of the entire family through Balvikas.
But as a medical doctor, Dr. Vidya, may I ask you that you're speaking of meat being detrimental to good health and good thoughts. What about the argument of protein?
You mean protein, what the source of protein?
Yes, yes.
See, we have our natural food also, right? For our, you know, the recommended daily allowance of protein can be brought, can be given to us even by the cereals and, you know, all the vegetarian food. You just need to explore what all vegetarian food is available and then you will know what your answer is. You know, you have your meat, you have your fruits, all your vegetables, and all of them are, you know, especially your pulses. I think they're the best. And see, you know, there are a lot of people who have survived eating only vegetarian food, haven't they?
Yeah. Millions of people in India are quite healthy without the meat because we are vegetarians traditionally.
Yes. See, during the initial years when Balvikas was started, I think Swami already knew, and he in fact handed over this task of nourishing and nurturing the young minds to the Mahila devotees. And they wondered, you know, how to do it. And they went and asked Swami how they were to start this program. And Swami's answer was very simple. He said, tell inspiring stories and make the children enact plays. What they do, they will never forget. Right? So that's how it all began. And I think that's how even it began for me. Because I vividly remember how we used to stage these dramas, even at the Samiti levels. And when I was around 6 or 7 years old, we had this drama called Bhakta Prahalada, the life of the small yet the great devotee of Lord Narayana. You know, I was fortunate to do the role of Prahalada himself. So the entire 2 months of practice, I think 3/4 of my dialogue was Om Namo Narayana, just chanting, you know, the divine name. And, you know, it made me understand the love that he had for the God and the unwavering, you know, the unshakable faith that he had on Lord Narayana.
Yeah.
So even now when I have any troubles my way, you know, I immediately remember all the troubles that he had to go through. So imagine, see, the troubles that we have now are so insignificant, you know, compared to what he had. See, imagine somebody puts you into a pot of fire or, you know, pushes you into the ocean. See, we are not having all that now. But it was only the constant remembrance of Lord's name that helped him cross all these hurdles. So, you know, that's the power of prayer. You know, Swami says, faith can move mountains, won't it move me, right? So we just need to do one thing, just pray. And it's so easy now that, you know, Swami says Namasmarana is the best way to reach God, especially in this Kali Yuga. We just need to pray to Him. We need to have this faith. But we should also make sure that, you know, our love and faith for Swami doesn't fluctuate according to whether our wishes are being fulfilled or not. We just need to have that unsteady, you know, sorry. We just need to have that steady faith on Swami. Talking about faith, actually, there have been a number of lessons that I have learnt where my faith has been tested and now how it's firmly established. This dates back to 2004 December. When we, the Balvikas children of Tamil Nadu, had prepared a drama to be staged in front of Swami, and we came over to Parthi. You know, we thought it could be as a part of Swami's birthday celebrations. So we came here in the first week of December. We reached here and we were waiting here for 3 to 4 days, but still we had not, you know, Swami had not given us that positive nod. He had not given us a chance to perform, so we were just waiting. And on the fourth day, I think on Sunday, our coordinator auntie came to us and said, "See, let's not trouble Swami, because I think his health is not helping him to sit for long hours to watch our drama." So that was the time Swami had some health issues, and we thought, okay, so just let us all return to Chennai. You know, Swami will give us another opportunity later on. So as soon as our coordinator completed the statement, one of our students, one of the Valvika students, she immediately extolled Swami, saying that, "See, Swami knows the best, because, you know, the 50 odd Valvika's children who were there at that time had our half yearly examinations the next day on Monday."
Mm-hmm.
So, see, though there was disappointment that we couldn't perform in front of Swami, it had been overcome by Swami's, you know, ways of helping us discharge our duties as students. See, half yearly is a crucial exam in every school, right? So we cannot afford to miss it. So we all started back, see, but the confusion, you know, the confusion that I had was a different, let me tell you that. Since we, you know, I was confident that Swami will anyway give us the opportunity to perform, because of which I knew I was going to miss my first exam. My first exam was language Hindi. So I did not bother to study that subject at all, seriously. So with a sudden change of events, and we even landed in Chennai on Monday morning at 4 a.m. and my exam was at 9 a.m., I didn't know what to do. See, certain portions were from the previous cycle test, but most of them were new, and I hadn't touched, you know, any of those portions. And, you know, I had my own doubts. See, I have had a good track of academic records in my school, and I was afraid, since I am writing the exam, and what if I don't fare well? What if I don't score the minimum percentage required to pass? And, you know, I had all these doubts because, you know, I was writing the exam. And I, you know what, I cleanly planned. I said, okay, I'm going to bunk this test. You know, anyway, I had not planned to attend, so I will just bunk this exam. My mother, you know, she always leaves all decisions to us. She'll tell us what is right, what is good, and then we have to decide, because she's taught us to, you know, take the responsibility for our actions. So I can't believe, you know, I had the nerve to bunk my half-yearly examinations. But the rest of the subjects I'd studied. So I had finished my exams, and exams got over, vacation started, and then after, you know, it was January, New Year, we all went to school, and results were announced. And my school teacher, my class teacher, she came to me and she said, "Vidya, you have indeed got the highest scores in the class. But I'm sorry to say you do not qualify for the general proficiency exam because you have not attended one test." She was not happy with that. My Hindi teacher who was there, she also, you know, she told me, she showed me the question paper and she said, "See, most of the questions were from the previous exams. I know you could have done well. You should have just attempted, and, you know, you would have really fared well." Not just that. The second rank boy who ended up getting the GP prize, he came to me and he said, with all humility, having thanked me, he said, "Look, Vidya, I think you should not miss any more exams." So on the same day, I was bombarded from all the corners. You know, it was like Swami who was telling me, "See, you did not believe in me." You know, I was under the illusion, since I am the doer, and because I did not prepare well, I lacked the confidence that, you know, I cannot do my exam well. So isn't that the biggest blunder in my life? See, forget about the GP prize. That's not the matter. The matter is, I had lost the faith in the divine hands, which was behind every event in my life. I was totally broken. I went home and I cried in front of Swami's photo in my room, and I said, "Swami, I'm so sorry. I will never let this happen again." You know, from that time, I had this staunch faith, you know, that whatever I do, whether it's small or big, Swami is the doer, and I am only a witness to this entire divine drama. See, it's a huge lesson that I've learned, you know. You know, that sense of doership is what comes in the way of your ego, and you think that you are the doer. And did Swami actually approve, you know, did Swami, was Swami happy with my lesson, whether I learnt it properly? Yes. This happened in 2007, when Swami had come down to Chennai for the Atirudra Mahayagnam. You know, the yagnam that is done for world peace, that was the golden period, you know, 15 days of Swami's love we could enjoy. And I think I was even more fortunate because my house is very close to Sundaram. You know, as close as Radio Sai is to the Arjun Mandir or even closer. So I had the opportunity to do my duty. You know, I was a Sevadal by then. I'd finished my Balvikas and I had entered the youth wing. So I was doing service at the odd times of the day, early mornings and late in the evenings. And the routine used to be, Swami would come out for darshan at around 8 a.m. in the morning. And then from there, he would start to the army grounds, which was a few kilometers away from Sundaram. And then I would go to my school. I was in my 11th standard then. I would go to my school, and as soon as school got over at around 3:30 p.m., I would come back to Sundaram again to do my duty. So this was happening. But I think one day, Swami, it was 8:30 a.m. in the morning, and even then Swami had not come out for darshan. I was getting late because I have to be in school before 9 a.m. So what did I do? I was praying, you know, Swami, please come out soon. Or, you know, I was even planning to bunk, but this time I wouldn't, right? You know, Swami is, you know, teaching us discipline. And even it was not easy because my school was very strict. So if I had to bunk, I had, either me or my parents have to inform them beforehand. Otherwise, I'd get into deep trouble. So, you know, all tearfully, I removed my scarf and I gave it to my Sevadal in charge. I told her, Auntie, I'm getting late, so I have to leave. Swami had not come out. I had not seen him on that day. You won't believe me, I had not crossed the road, you know, outside Swami's temple. I saw my school principal standing there. She was also waiting to catch a glimpse of Swami when he was, you know, he would leave in his car to the army grounds. So I gathered all courage and I went up to her. I requested her, ma'am, I requested her and I told her, ma'am, see, I was doing duty. Swami has not come out for darshan yet. Can you please give me an hour or two for permission so that I can finish the program and I can be in school as early as possible? I don't believe how I did that, but I went and asked her. She didn't know me then, you know. My school principal hadn't known me. It was just my 11th standard. She turned to her right and there was my class teacher next to her. And, you know, both of them are Swami's devotees, thankfully. So she turned to my class teacher and asked her, you know, is she a good student? I mean, you know, can I give her the permission? And my class teacher was all in affirmation. See, I was, by Swami's grace, I had always lived up to whatever he asked us to do. So that helped me. And I heard only these two words, okay, go. And, you know, I immediately ran back to the temple I asked. And I was in front of my Sevadal again. She was bewildered. You know, you just went, you're coming back again. What's happening? I just told her, you know, please give me the scarf. I'm back to duty. And that was one of the best days I can remember. It was on 25th of January 2007 that I had a beautiful darshan of Swami. You know, and eye-to-eye contact with Swami I had that day. It's still in my, you know, that frame is still in my mind, that beautiful, effulgent face of Swami. Actually, after a couple of seconds, I couldn't take up. It was so, I don't have no words for that. And then the same day, you won't believe, I went back to school and I asked, and I, this time I had a letter in me, and I wrote to my school principal, asking her to grant me 5 days leave. You know, she was short. She was totally shocked. See, nobody asks us for leave at a stretch, you know. But and even she was shocked because we had our 12th standard portions already started then. So she was wondering how I'd manage. No, my biology teacher was with her at that time, and you know, she said, yeah, she is a good, well-mannered student. She is very regular, and I'm sure she will do her exams well and all that. See, you know, Swami always says, care not for marks, but for your remarks. And I'm so happy that because of these remarks, because as a Balvika student, I had learnt, you know, what Swami's teachings are, and I made sure I followed that in school, and those remarks only helped me at that time. You know, that's why my, you know, without a second thought, my school principal had actually sanctioned, you know, the leave letter. Can you believe 5 days leave? She sanctioned it, and I'm really thankful to her. And the next 1 week, but you know, she said one thing. When she sanctioned my letter, she just had one condition. That was not to miss my 11th standard board exam. See, in our state, even for 11th, we had a board exam, and that was on February 1st. So she said, at no cost, you're going to miss your board exams. See, will I miss my exams anymore?
No.
Never
again.
Haven't I been enlightened, yes, you know, enough? So I told her, no, ma'am, I will not miss. I thanked her and I, you know, left. And that 1 week of Swami's darshan was awesome. You know, it was like enjoying Swami's proximity and having his darshan 24/7, you know, almost every day. And then the last day came on Jan 31st. Swami had prepared to leave, Chennai, and he was starting towards Parthi. And I remember how, in a very cute manner, he actually waved a bye to all of us and he left. And then, after that, I was in a total state of bliss. You remember I had my exam the next day, but I had my physics book in front of me, but nothing would get into my mind. I was totally floating high in the skies, and I refused to come down to earth. But nevertheless, I just, skimmed through all the papers, whatever I could do in that night, and I went for the exam the next day. This time I know. See, Swami is the doer, right? I have no doubts about it. And will you be any surprised if I say that I actually got the second highest in the school with 92% in that exam? So, Swami is there. But let me be very clear. See, it does not mean that, if you don't study, but you have the faith in Swami, he will do your exams. No.
It doesn't work like that. I'm sure a lot of children who are listening to you were hoping you can get the gold medals by just not studying.
It doesn't work. I have experienced that also.
Okay.
What is important is our sincere efforts. We just need to do our best of the abilities and then leave everything to Swami, Swami says, take the first step towards me, I'll take 100 towards you. So it's just, but that first step is really important, and that we need to do with a lot of faith. With faith comes the feeling of surrender. See, whatever happens to you, be it good or bad. See, good and bad are something that we have formulated for ourselves. It only exists in our dictionary, not in Swami's. So whether it's good or bad, it is the will of the Lord. And he knows the best for you.
Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome back to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. Today is the 21st of May, 2015. And the time in Prashanthi Nilayam, India right now is 37 minutes past 10 a.m. Indian Standard Time. You just heard part one of our Learning with Love interview with Dr. P.L. Vidya of Chennai. This outstanding young lady continues to blaze trails every single day. In her latest email, she says, and I quote her, "At this moment, I would like to share my happiness with you. Only because of Swami's grace and will, I have secured the second rank in AIIMS, that is AIIMS Delhi, postgraduate entrance, and will be joining as junior resident MD, general medicine at June end. As always, Swami is the doer, and I would be really happy to be his instrument forever," unquote. By the way, dear listeners, AIIMS or AIIMS is the prestigious All India Institute of Medical Sciences, the premier medical facility and the premier medical school in India, and possibly the hardest to get into for a post-grad program in medicine. You can catch part two of this conversation with Dr. P.L. Vidya right here on Morning Glory next Thursday. While our congratulations go out to Dr. P.L. Vidya, our request goes out to all our listeners to share their feedback on this interview by email by reaching us at listener@radiosci.org. And now, on Morning Glory, we'd like to take a moment to salute the supreme devotee of Bhagwan Sri Satisai Baba, his dearest pet elephant, Sai Geeta, who left the body on May 22nd, 2007. May Swami bless all of us with just an iota of the devotion that Sai Geeta personified. Swami described her as the epitome of an ideal devotee whose thoughts were always concentrated on her Lord. Moving along, today is a day to remember another anniversary. 3 years ago, on 17th of May 2012, Thursday Live debuted on Radio Sai for the first time. As this week we complete the third year of Thursday Live, we would like to take this opportunity to offer all our efforts at Bhagwan's lotus feet. And we would also like to thank all our listeners whose feedback, comments and suggestions have brought us this far. Thank you so much, dear sisters and brothers, for your company on this wonderful journey. Now, as I bid you Sairam, I leave you to enjoy a brand new episode of Tris with Divinity. This is an interview that my colleague Mr. Bishu Prushti conducted with Mr. Jagannathan of Sri Lanka. And this is a must listen, and I know you're going to derive a lot of information, insight and inspiration from this interview. So please enjoy it, and till we meet next Thursday, Jai Sairam.
Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to Tryst with Divinity, our series of conversations with people who have been touched by the love of Bhagwan. I am Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and just a couple of days ago in the mandir, I spotted someone who has been blessed by Bhagwan to be his instrument in a large way in the small pearl island of Sri Lanka. He has been actively involved in the Satya Sai movement in this beautiful island nation for decades, and now actually spearheading this profuse expansion of Sai love in Sri Lanka. He is currently the chairman of Central Council Sri Satya Sai Organization Sri Lanka, Dr. Jagannathan Vishwanathar. Having come to Bhagwan way back in the 70s, over the years, Dr. Jagannathan has served the Lord, offering his time and energy in various positions of the Sri Satya Sai organizations. He was earlier the center president of Colombo Sai Center, as well as of the Batticola Sai Center. Later, he moved on to become the regional chairman of the Eastern Region Satya Sai Organization, Sri Lanka, then the National Coordinator of Satya Sai Education, and eventually the Deputy Central Coordinator of Satya Sai Organization there. This happened in 2000, and as I mentioned, for more than a year and a half now, he is the Chairman of the Central Council of Satya Sai Organization. Additionally, he is also the Director of Institute of Satya Sai Education, Sri Lanka. Yes, this island nation, little nation, which is perhaps just 2% of India's size and slightly larger than the state of West Virginia, USA, this tiny nation has an institute of Satya Sai education. And sir is very much part of that. He's the director of this institution. And that only shows how vibrant is the movement in Sri Lanka. The population of this island is perhaps 20 million. And of this, nearly 2 million are devotees, and it is only increasing. There are many national projects that have been taken up centrally by the organization in different parts of the country, one of them being a hospice for cancer patients near Colombo, and Dr. Jagannathan is the chairman of the board of management of this hospice. Besides, there is a Satya Sai school in Jaffna, a home for orphan children in Vavuniya, and so on. There are many national projects. Apart from these, there are plenty of activities happening at the regional and samiti level. So we'll hear all about this from Dr. Jagannathan in a short while. But before that, before we begin, let me also tell you that professionally, Dr. Jagannathan is a seasoned healthcare professional who has had a very distinguished career. Almost all his life, he has served in the government of Sri Lanka, in the state services, in various positions. He is a fellow of the College of Medical Administrators, Sri Lanka. And before his retirement, which happened in 1998, he was the Director General of Health Services, Sri Lanka. In fact, after his retirement in 1998, the government requested him to continue in the same position and granted him 1 year extension. And this was an exceptional thing, which was passed by the government, and they desperately needed him to continue in that position. And after this, he served for some time as a consultant in World Health Organization as well as in World Bank. And the government again came knocking at his door, and that is how he was called back to serve now as a consultant to the Ministry of Health, Sri Lanka. And he served in this position from 2003 till 2010. And when he was serving in this capacity, he had the mandate to improve the healthcare situation of the northern and eastern provinces of Sri Lanka, and he served in this position giving so much of his commitment, his experience and his expertise in this area of healthcare development to the government and to the people of Sri Lanka. And even as he was busy with all this, never for a moment he in any way allowed his contribution to the Satya Sai organization decrease or slow down. And even now, even though he's past 75, he's as active as someone who is 55 and always smiling, very gentle and endearing personality. No wonder the Sai movement in Sri Lanka is so glorious and is just only going ahead every passing season. So with great pleasure I welcome you, sir, to the studios of Radio Sai.
Sri Sai Ram, Brother Bishu, thank you so much for all the sweet words you have spoken about me. I do not know whether I deserve all that. Talking about myself a little, I think in terms in 1970, when I was working at the General Hospital, Batiklo, as an anesthetist, I used to go for night casualties. And one day it so happened that I had a heavy casualty session in the Batiklo Hospital Theatre. Came back home around 4 a.m., so tired and virtually collapsed in the bed. And around 5 a.m., we heard some noise outside, you know, beating of drums and, you know, the talas and things like that. Mm-hmm. And a group singing aloud and going down the road in which we are living. So my wife and I went out to see what was happening. And then there was a group singing devotional songs and, you know, going down the road. And in that group, I also saw a doctor who was working in the Batiklo Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling my wife, oh, look at this. These people have no other work, disturbing the whole community while the people are sleeping. And look at this doctor. I mean, I can't understand him. Shameless on him. I mean, going about the street singing. Later on only I came to know, oh, I have missed that opportunity while I was in Batiklo. If I had joined that group at that time, maybe I would have come to see Swami much earlier and would have had his darshan, sparshan and maybe sambhashan much earlier, because I heard it was very much easier those days than it was subsequently.
But then the process had begun.
But of course, Swami had time for everybody.
Yes.
And I had to wait till the 1970s. I think it was in 1977 when I was working in the Kalmana Base Hospital as the district medical officer in charge. My children were called to attend the Badavikas classes by another doctor who was working there. He was the president of the Kalmana Center. Then our children joined the Malavikas class and they were following the Malavikas classes. And we used to go for, you know, special occasions and, you know, when we are invited. That is how we got drawn into it. And then the doctor brought and gave us a nice picture of Swami. And he said, you have it in this, your prayer room. And then we had it in our prayer room. Soon after that,
you had no problems accepting the picture of Swami and placing it in your prayer room because you had not really seen Swami, you're not really been so exposed to who Swami is. But whether or not any reservations in your mind at that time accepting Swami, it just happened.
There was actually no reservations, but really, I mean, at that time, it did not make much of an impact on me or my family to have that picture. We just had it because that doctor gave it. And my children were following the Balinas classes.
And you were happy about the training that the children were getting.
Yes. Then it so happened on the 31st of January during that year, it was my son's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And Kalmana, my third son's birthday, Kalmana Center celebrated its anniversary of opening that center. So my wife and I decided that we should prepare something and take it to the center for distribution to the people who come there. And she made some of these things, some kesari or something like that. And after making it, she was trying to cut it and then, you know, count the number of pieces. So I said, why do you want to count? You don't know how many will come there. Don't worry, you will have enough. So we packed it and took it there. And when it was distributed, it's the doctor who, the president who distributed. Believe me, he distributed himself, one for each person, for everybody, children, adults, everybody. And he had one last one for himself. Mm-hmm. So the exact number was there.
Mm-hmm.
So I told my wife, see, this is how divinity works, right? So don't worry about these things. So that gave us a little sort of, you know, I mean, strength in the belief that, you know, there is divinity and there's something in Sai Baba.
Yes.
Later on, we started going for bhajans and things like that. And then, you know, then I got a shift to Badala Hospital. Badala is in the upcountry, okay, as you would know. They also had a center, but they had only bhajans at that time. You were going for bhajans there. Then in 81, I came to Batikala Hospital as the medical officer, a medical superintendent of that hospital. Batikala had a very old center. In fact, in Sri Lanka, the first center was in Colombo and in Kottayana. Then the second was in Jaffna and the third one was in Batikala. That was in the early 60s,
okay,
60, maybe 66, 67. Like that.
Wow.
So, then I was working there. Then the particular president one day came and said, told me, "Sir, I understand you are a high devotee. Swami's birthday is coming. You must come and give a talk." I said, "What do I know about Swami? How can I talk about him?" "No, no, I'll give you a book. You read something." And
so by then you have not even visited Prasanthanilayam. You have not yet seen Swami.
No. This happened in 82. So I said, "I don't know anything about Swami. How can I talk about him?" He said, "No, I'll give you a book on Swami. You just read it and come." Of course, he gave me a book, and then because the pressure of my work, I really didn't have much time to go through the book. But I just selected one chapter and then just sort of, you know, glanced through that, and then I went and made a speech. The president told me that it was well received. I don't know. After that, he said, "You must come for our guru's training programs." And then we were also in the process of setting up new centers in the Batikala district and Ampara district. So I used to go with him and the team. And we were opening a lot of centers and we were doing good work. And my children were following Malavika's classes in Batikala. Then I think it was in 83, the first time we came to Puttaparthi to see Swami. We came during the Christmas time. I just cannot describe the feeling which we had when he came here. It was really like surgam or heaven for us, you know. And the first time I saw Swami in the mandir, I don't know, tears were pouring down my eyes, and I just cannot describe the emotional upheaval that happened within me. And I felt that, you know, I mean, Swami is one person. You look at him, you feel like keeping on looking at him. The piercing eyes he has, and, you know. And also on the same day, on the very first day, we were seated inside the mandir, and then Swami, while the bhajan was going on, he came down and he was walking along the aisle on the carpet. When he came back, I think he slowed down a little. I don't know, without my knowledge, I touched his feet. So this really, I mean, gave a lot of feelings within myself. I mean, I told my wife, "This is what happened." Then, of course, almost every 2 years we were coming.
So it was the first visit, Swami didn't speak to you or
no,
anything?
No.
Just you saw him and something happened with him.
Saw him and then, you know, I mean, for a flick of a moment, I saw Swami looking at me. And I felt his piercing, you know, eyes sort of pricking through me, and then, you know. So that's the time I started, you know, a lot of tears came, and then, you know, almost nothing. Then 2 years later, I think we came, and that was Malavika's convention, I think, at that time.
Maybe 60th birthday.
Yeah, 60th birthday. That's right, 60th birthday. Then, on that occasion, of course, my children were participating in an international cultural show, which they prepared when here. And after the program, my children, all three sons, they had Pada Namaskar before us.
Yes, they had the chance.
They had that blessing with them. And after that, almost every 1 year or 2 years, we used to come to.
So you just felt drawn to the place, drawn to Swami. That's
yeah.
It.
This is how we got drawn into Swami's, and then I got more interested in Swami's education programs. That's how I got involved in the teacher training programs and things like that.
So, what is it about Swami's education philosophy or the system that really...
Well, I think about Satya Sai education program, what I felt was, I mean, Swami's philosophy of Satya Sai education and the teaching techniques, I thought it's quite different from what we have in the secular education in Sri Lanka. And later on, I mean, even now I am learning about Swami Satya Sai education program, because the more we read and the more we talk about it, the more we experience it, still we are trying to understand a lot of things. Subsequently, I felt that there is definitely a gap in our education system, because we are producing professionals, doctors, scientists, lawyers, everybody. But how many of them, I personally felt, how many of them are really behaving as human beings? So they have felt that there is something missing. Then when I read Swami's philosophy on education, I came to know Swami himself has said there are two aspects to education, the external education and the internal education. And Swami's beautiful definition about education, the end of education is character. And character is unity of thought, word and deed. And how this Swami's education program builds up character, and which ends in the building of human excellence.
Yes.
So that's why I got attracted to the Swami's teachings on education, and then I started reading books and then participating in the training programs, which prompted me to go a little more and more deeper into that.
Into the teachings.
Yeah. So then, of course, I think from Batticolo, then I went to Ampara as the regional rector of health services.
That
it was
there.
A very, very, very difficult period at that time because of the conflict and...
the war in Sri Lanka.
Yes, because of the war. And in 1990, I would say, I remember, the IPKF was in charge of the security, Indian Peacekeeping Force, was in charge of the security of the North and East. So, one day when I was in office, my office was in Ampara, and but my family was in Kalmana, about 16 miles away in between. I got a call from my wife saying, there's a little bit of a problem in this area, please come immediately. I went there to see the area where we were living was cordoned off, and then, an armed group, not the LTT, because they were coming with an IPKF soldier. They were collecting all the youngsters from that area, girls and boys. They wanted to take them to the IPKF camp for an identification parade. In the sense, because they had information, there had been some movement of LTT cadres in that area previous night. So they wanted to take all the children, all the girls and boys for an identification session. I came at the correct time when they were about three or four houses away from where we were living. And when they came to our house, they asked me, where are your children? I said, they are there. Call them. I said, okay, call them. Ah, such big boys. Okay, we have to take them. I said, why? Why do you want to take my sons? Now, these were an identification. We are taking them to camp and then they'll come back. I said, no, I'm sorry. I'm not allowing them to go with you. Because my sons go to school, they come back and they are at home. And if you want to know more about my children, go to the principal and ask how my children are. My two sons were there at that time. But they wouldn't listen. They said, no, we have to take them. I said, no, my dear, I am not going to allow them. Then the IPK soldier was standing on the road. Then he also came closer and said, So, I mean, these people have to take your sons also. Otherwise, they'll be found fault with by their leaders. I said, no, I'm sorry. I mean, I don't want my children to go to the camp, and then, because that will demoralize them. They're already in fear. He wouldn't listen. Then I said, I know the OIC of the IPKF camp. If I remember his name, it was one Major Nanda Kumar or somebody who was there.
The OIC?
I had his telephone number.
OIC, you said?
OIC of the camp, IPKF camp in that area.
Who is an OIC?
Officer in charge. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I had his telephone number because I, being the regional director of health services, he came and saw me to find out about the hospitals and that and this and that, about the services. So, I said, well, I'll give a call to the officer in charge. But there were two boys with guns, They wouldn't allow me to go into the house even. So, my wife, myself, and my two sons were there. However much we pleaded, they wouldn't listen. They said, no, we have to take. I said, no, I am not allowing him to take. Of course, during that whole process within myself, I am praying to Swami, intense prayer, right? And then ultimately it happened so that he said, no, if you are not going to listen to us, we'll have to give the treatment. And then he was trying to sort of, you know, I mean, adjust his AK-47 or something like that. I heard a click, and then, you know, my wife broke down and she also, then I also sort of this thing, and I shouted, Swami, please save us. Please save us, Swami. Please save us. I heard a noise and I felt that the muzzle of the gun where you load the bullets, it had got detached and it had fallen down.
Oh.
And this boy was trying to sort of, you know, I mean, pick up the bullets and putting it into this thing and then trying to refit it. But he took about 3 to 5 minutes to do that. Then his companion also came and both of them struggled and then they put it back. By the time he had cooled down a little and he said, Doctor, it's not our intention to take your sons, but if you don't take your sons, our leader will find fault with us. And we don't know what treatment we will be meted with. Then the IPKF officer also said, so it is my responsibility. I will take your children. Bring them back to you. I said, in that case, I am also coming.
Oh, okay.
I am also coming. I said, oh, he said, okay, come. Then I was praying to Swami all the time. My wife said, she will also come. I said, no, you don't have to come. You wait here. Believe me, we wouldn't have gone 50 yards.
Mm-hmm.
There's a junction there. At that time, there was not a soul on the road, you know, I mean, anyway, in that area. Suddenly a vehicle came. I don't know from where it came. The vehicle stopped at the junction. A very young man stepped down and he walked towards us. I asked the IPKF officer, who is this gentleman? He said, he's the leader of this group. I walked up to him and said, I talked to him in Tamil. I said, brother, do you want my sons also to come to the camp? Apparently he knew me because I was the regional director of health services in that area. He said, no, doctor, it's okay. You're taking your children back home, but don't allow them to come onto the road where these people will pick them up. Because we know the service which you are doing. I don't want to take your sons. I don't know from where he came and maybe Swami sent him. And then.
Yes.
So of course, then we went back home and then, you know, I went to the shrine room and fell down and prayed to Swami, cried to Swami, thanked him, the whole family, for saving him.
Mm.
Because what I felt was not that I was scared that, you know, anything would have happened to our sons or they would have taken them and, you know, would have seen, but that the fact for them to sort of go to a camp and then be in the identification sort of, you know, group I'm going through that process would have demoralized. For that matter, any child would have happened.
This is something which will just stay in the subconscious mind of the child and
absolutely.
It will affect it.
Absolutely.
Always.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So then we were really wondering whether to leave that place and then, you know, go somewhere else. But we couldn't move out of Kalmana because during that time there were a lot of problems and, you know, many people don't like to sort of go onto the road even. And to make things worse, there was frequent Muslim-Tamil clashes during that time in that province. And I don't know whether you would have noticed when you visited Batikilo that from Vadachena up to Pottivil, easily about more than 200 kilometers, you find Tamil villages and Muslim villages alternatively situated.
Yes.
You find a 100% Tamil village, then the next one is 100% Muslim village. Like that, it goes on right along the eastern coast up to Pottivil. So we were really scared to sort of leave the place. And so we were only praying to Swami. Intense prayer, 3 times a day or even more than that. Praying to Swami. And then we waited. Still, whatever it is, I had some sort of courage within me and some strength, maybe what Swami has given me, that nothing will happen to us. Just hold on. By that time, I mean, most of the people in the area had left that place, except the elders who are there in the houses, to protect the houses. Many of them came to us and said, why are you keeping your sons here and waiting? You see, please take them somewhere. Leave them somewhere else and you come back. Right? But there was no way of going. So I had to ring up the government agent of Ampara. He was a man from Kandy. So I told him, sir, this is the situation. I find it difficult to sort of stay here. Please do something and then, you know, help us to come out and get out of this place. I leave my family in Colombo and then I come back and then, you know, be in Ampara and serve. Then he said, okay, doctor, I am going to Kandy today. If you can come to Ampara, I will take you. By that time, the IPK have left and then Sri Lankan special task force has come and taken over. So he contacted the STF command of Kalmana and then told him to bring us. And then I had to go to the camp and then, you know, we got into his jeep and then, you know, we were brought to take him to Ampara. And then the government agent, incidentally, his government agent is somewhat equivalent to a collector in India.
Mm-hmm.
He took us to Kandy and then we were in Kandy in Dr. Friend's house for about a month. In the meantime, I went to Colombo and reported to the ministry. And then, fortunately, the then health minister was okay with me, quite sort of, you know, I mean, she was a lady. When she came to Ampara, I mean, she liked, you know, how the office was and how it was functioning. So she said, no, Jaga, you don't go anywhere. You come and serve here. I'll give you a place there in the ministry. Then I was regional director of health service for Colombo district for about 1 year. After that, I was called to the ministry to serve in 1992. But when we were in Colombo, we moved into Colombo in 1990. 91, I was going to Barnes Place for bhajan, something like that. And 91, October, we came to Prasanthi Nilayam. By that other time, we have put up that mandir building. And we came to Swami to get his blessings and a date for opening.
Uh-huh. Opening the Sai Center in...
Yeah, the Barnes Place Center.
Okay.
Yeah. So, as usual, Swami kept us for about 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the 10th of October, Swami called us for an interview. I was so thrilled because that happened to me, my birthday.
Wow.
So in the morning, for darshan, I mean, because my wife was very keen, so she said, somebody has told her, you see, you take a tray with flowers and, you know, cardamoms and that and this and all that. Swami will bless your husband. So she went to the shop and bought everything and prepared, bought a tray also and prepared everything and gave it to me in the morning. So I came to the morning darshan, did a lot of calculation, this line might go first, my go first and all that. Mm. And then, but ultimately I got the seventh line.
Okay.
I was seated there. Then one of our Sri Lankan devotee was on the, he was down the second line. So he turned back and looked at me and said, quietly, come here. And then he gave a little space. Mm. I was reluctant to move in because it was not correct. But still, because of the enthusiasm to some more get Swami's blessings.
On that special day.
Yeah, special day, I moved in.
Mm.
Swami came. Swami came, Swami, Swami. And with a smile from the corner of his mouth, he looked at me, smiled, and then he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
As if, you know, what birthday for you. So I was really feeling dejected and disappointed. And then I went back to the room and I told my wife, oh, this has happened. So she said, no, no, don't worry about it. There's an afternoon darshan, no, today, right? So you go back, take it. Then she, the one who said, okay, you don't take anything, take only the toffees, bag of toffees. With that came, no calculation, just came and sort of, you know, sat down a line, and then fortunately that was number one token.
Wow.
And then the first line, Swami came, as usual, he blessed, and then, you know, took the toffees, style of throwing the toffees to everybody. And then four or five people onto my left was the president of the Kadamba Samiti.
Mm-hmm.
Swami stopped and talked to him, and then he told him to come for the interview.
Okay.
He asked for the interview, and so he went there. Then we had prepared an album and bought a new pen also for Swami to write something. Swami went through the album, and then I was just seated in front of him at his feet. Swami saw that, and then he asked, where is the mandir? He asked. I was about to tell Swami, Swami, it's in Kalambu, number 22, Bounce Place. Fortunately, I didn't say that. Before I said that, Swami put his right hand on his chest and said, this is the mandir.
Wow.
This is the mandir. This building you are trying to open is for your activities, seva activities, educational activities. Had the opening on the 18th of January. Then Mr. Nesaratnam was president. He said, Swami, we want Swami's presence. I am there. Already I am there. I will be there. Don't worry. The next question he asked was, how did you find money to put up this center? Then the president said, Swami, it's all donations from devotees. No, 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 no. Don't go and beg for money. You are not a beggar. You are bigger. Swami will give you money if you want. How much money do you need to complete the building? Then Brother Nes said, Swami, we need only about 100,000 Sri Lankan rupees to complete it, to do the final touch. Swami will give you that money.
Amazing.
So after that, then of course it came to, then Swami's interview, you know, no, I mean his questions, what are the four F's and what knowledge you know, and practical knowledge, the best knowledge and that and this and all that. I don't know, most of us failed in that interview, but then Swami came out with the answers, blessed us. And then it came to a point, then, you know, some of them wanted to sort of come out with their individual family problems and things like that they were discussing. There was, it was the president of the Kalamba Samiti. He was talking about his only daughter who was in America doing her degree in English literature. Then he said, Swami, she wants to do the master's. Then Swami said, she wants to do MA in English. Before her MA, she will do her MRS. She will do her MRS. So Brother Nesaratnam said, Swami, what do you mean? No, she will be an MRS before the MA. And within about 6 months, it happened that she got married. Before MA. So everybody had a turn, and then, of course, I didn't come out with anything to Swami. Neither did my wife speak anything. So Swami asked, how are you? What are you doing? She asked. So I said, Swami, I am a doctor. You are a doctor? No, you are a patient. So, then he said, I know you had some, Swami knows that you had a lot of problems and you are thinking of going out of Ceylon. You are wondering whether to go to UK or America or Australia. Swami tells you not to go anywhere. Be in Ceylon.
Swami said.
Be in Ceylon. I said, yes, Swami, I'll be in Ceylon.
You had thoughts of going to...
Really, we had thought, because we were thinking, because one son was already, he had gone to UK, the first one. Mm. The two others were there. My wife's sister and them were in UK. So we thought I might as well go, because we thought Sri Lanka is not a very good place to sort of, you know, especially for my children, not for us. Swami said, don't go. So we gave up that idea, and then, you know, everything like that. So then after the interview, we went back to Colombo. The following Thursday, after bhajan, one lady brought and donated exactly 100,000. We don't know who that lady is. Who that lady is, and she donated, and then she went off. So we were able to complete that building.
It always happens like that, isn't it?
It always happens. So those are some of the things we sort of, I mean, how Swami drew us more and more into this thing. Then, of course, we thought of this national project of establishing a hospice. And once the hospice was established, I was really in the committee, sort of trying to organize that. And then I was asked, we had a meeting, he had Brother Hira was the chairman of the Eastern Globe, I think, at that time. Meeting with him, so Brother Hira asked, who is going to take charge of the hospice? Then the central coordinator said, Dr. Jagai will take over. He's also the deputy central coordinator looking after education. Then Brother Hira said, no, it will be difficult for him to do both. Dr. Jagai, you choose whatever you want. And I said, okay, I'll do the hospice. But please don't sort of, you know, remove me from the education sector, because that is what I am, how I came to Swami. I still like to sort of, you know, be in that. Yes, that's okay. And then that's how I became the chairman of the hospice. And then, you know, it was like that. So it was going on like that. I mean, it's
wonderful. I mean, the hospice, I had the chance to visit the hospice I was in Sri Lanka. And I should tell you that the prayer hall, the round prayer hall, which is there, though it's a very tiny structure, but I have to share with you that the day when I stepped into that prayer hall, I just felt so much of healing energy. Absolutely. In fact, that morning I was not feeling well. I had just landed in Sri Lanka, and you know, the first morning in Sri Lanka, and I was going there.
Yeah, we took you there.
Yes. But the moment I stepped in the car, I was not feeling all right. Mm. But when I set my foot into that space, I really felt so healed. It is really a very beautiful, very blessed place. And of course, the whole thing is in the lap of nature. And
it's a wonderful place, really. Because, I mean, it promotes the unity of faiths also. I mean, patients belonging to different faiths all go together. And then many of them do sing bhajans now. And you would have noticed, I mean, they are cancer patients.
Yes.
But still, look at them. They are always smiling.
Yes.
Smiling. And many of them, you ask them, would you like to go back home? No.
No.
Yes.
That we saw. I mean, it was, you never felt that they were all patient. They were all like a family.
Absolutely.
Having a great time.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that was a wonderful project Swami gave us. And we are so happy about it.
Prema Swaruplara.
Happy. 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 Be happy. 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 Make others happy. All will be happy. God will be happy.